UWA-517, do you want to report a UFO?
Negative. We don't want to report.
Ares 31, do you wish to report a UFO? Over.
Negative. We want to report one of those either.
Ares 31, do you wish to file a report of any kind? Over.
I wouldn't know what kind of report to file, sir.
Ares 31, me neither.
There's 71 Papa Golf, go ahead.
And was there anybody above us that passed us like 30 seconds ago?
There's 71 Papa Golf, negative.
Okay. Stop this. It's a UFO.
Yeah. Hey, it's Merge 295. Yeah, something just passed over. Don't know what it was, but it's at least 2,000-3,000 feet above us. Yeah, it passed right over the top of us.
911.
You guys busy? Did we just call about the UFOs we saw?
Mm-hmm.
They're out there, taking airplanes.
County dispatch. Bob, I swear to God, 4 calls in on an unidentified object over Liberty.
4 calls.
4 calls on an unidentified flying object.
All right, take a look. All right, we'll check it out.
Welcome to UFO Chronicles, a place where people share their experiences of the strange and unexplained. If you've had an encounter and would like to be on the show, you can email me at ufochronicles@gmail.com.
Hello everyone and welcome to the show. You know, we have listeners all over the world, far and wide. So wherever you are listening from, thank you for spending a little time with us tonight. Our guest this episode is Barbara, calling from North Carolina, sharing her abduction experiences, which began when she first moved to the Antelope Valley in California at the end of the 1980s. But first, if you enjoy the show and you would like to help support the podcast on Patreon, you can do this for as little as $1 a month. Head on over to www.patreon.com/UFO Chronicles Podcast. You can also find a link in the description of this episode below. Any help is very much appreciated. Now, on with the show. Welcome to the show, Barbara.
Thank you. Thank you very much. Nervous to be here.
Oh, that's normal. It is great to have you on the show and coming on and sharing your experiences today. Calling from North Carolina.
Yes.
Now this all began for you in 1989. Would you like to start at the very beginning for our listeners, please, Barbara?
Yes. Back in 89, I lived in the desert in California. And I had a job, a normal job and everything. And the incident that happened to me actually happened 3 times, but I didn't connect the first 2 incidences with what happened the 3rd time. I'll just start at the beginning. I had just moved to the desert. I moved in with my brother, and I have no interest in science fiction, no interest in flying saucers, even though I feel like I saw one when I was a teenager. But I mean, that was my only thing. I mean, I didn't get into it. I wasn't into it. I didn't care about all the sci-fi stuff, and I don't have an imagination to make up things and no desire to make up things. And I never try and call attention to myself and in weird ways. I was always just an average lady. And I'm in my 60s now, but I was in my 30s then. And so it's a normal night. I go to sleep and I have this intense, terrifying dream that I am on a slab kind of thing. And I'm being examined being violated, you could say, I guess, with objects. And it's a dream, and I know it's a dream. And it was a really scary, terrifying, very, very realistic dream. And I knew I was dreaming, and I kept trying to wake up from this dream. And I was like reaching out for the lamp so I could turn on the bedside table. And I was truly fighting to wake up. And I finally was able to wake myself up. It was like when I was trying to reach for the lamp, it's almost like I was reaching through a membrane or something. It was like my hand wasn't making it to the lamp. And so when I did wake up, I was so freaked out that I had a notebook and pen beside my bed. And I went ahead and I just wrote it down. I wrote down the dream and I forgot all about it. But I mean, it was so gnarly that I wrote it down. And I'm not like a person that writes down dreams and tries to interpret it. I mean, I'm not all, you know, into weird stuff, you know. I just thought that one was really, really trippy and really noteworthy. And I just wrote it down. And that was that. So then I go on with life and nothing. I mean, there was something that happened the next night that really freaked me out too. And I never really related any of this all together. And this is really the first time I'm telling these things that happened to me to a person outside of people that know me well and my family. Because it just sounds like a crock. I mean, and I'm not trying to be a weirdo or anything, but anyways, the next night, something was like moving my leg. Okay, I don't do drugs. I don't drink. I didn't smoke cigarettes or weed or anything. I'm just like a regular straight chick. And something is moving my leg, like almost magnetically. And that really panicked me because I'm thinking, what is going on? Is this a ghost or what? I'm not thinking anything other than this is really weird. This is really scary. And I didn't even relate it to the dream that I had the night before. I just thought that is bizarre. And again, I had to tear myself awake. But I really feel like I really wasn't sleeping that time. I was in that kind of twilight type of sleep. And so that was that. So now about a year goes by. I move out. I get this little house, one bedroom house. And so, you know, I'm living alone. I have a great life. I have a great job, just real average. I mean, the desert, there's, you know, really nothing to do. You go to work, you come home, that's it, whatever. So anyways, so one night, so I'd been dating somebody, and so we had broken up and whatever, and it wasn't anything terrible or violent or anything like that. It was just like a relationship that didn't work out. But the reason why I bring it up is because the next thing that happened to me was I wake up one morning and I have that sensation that I've been violated. And, you know, like when you're a woman, I mean, you just know if something is not right, especially if you have a normal standard life and you're not out there getting nuts or anything. And I was livid. I was very angry because the first thing that I thought of was that the ex maybe came over, drugged my orange juice, and did something when I was asleep. And I mean, there wasn't anything to evidence that. It was just a feeling. And I called him and I was really outraged. And his response was so shocked. And you could tell he was profoundly denying it. I know that he was telling the truth. He was like, you know, hurt by that accusation. And so I apologized, but I had the weirds after that. Like, I was like, okay. So then I just got super duper security conscious. Not panicky, not freaked out, but like, you know, I just made sure all my doors and all my windows were locked at all times. Now, the house that I lived in was a tiny one bedroom, and the way it was set up was kind of like almost like a circle or a U shape. Like it had a back door and a front door. The back door led right into the kitchen. Then the kitchen had another door that led into the living room. And then there was another door that led into the bedroom. And then there was another door that led into the bathroom. So I was just very, very secure in the knowledge that my house was completely locked down and everything was cool. And I went to bed and I had to be up at 4 a.m. every day to be at work at 6 where I worked. So, you know, normal night, everything's cool. I'm not all paranoid. I feel safe. And then in the middle of the night, you know, I became aware that somebody was entering my house, and it happened really, really fast. And it was like from the back door to get into my room, it was like instantaneous rush of like, if I had to try and picture it or describe it where you can understand how fast it was like a, like an energy that just like went from the back door through the rooms up to my bed. My bed was beside a wall that had a window. So, and my head was facing against the wall that was opposite the door where they came in. And I'll explain why I said they, but it was that kind of instantaneous knowledge that something bad is just about to go down. And so the second I was aware that somebody was coming in, I like, because I was laying on my stomach and my head was facing the opposite wall, you know how you have to like get up at the waist, like you swing your top of your body around to look at the back door, because you're laying on your stomach. So you have to kind of like wing around to look at the door. And the second I did that, I get completely slammed down from the base of my spine to the base of my skull, like magnetically, like a mouse trap is the only way I can describe it. It was like, I get bam, bam down. And like, my heart is beating so fast. And I knew, and it was happening so instantaneously that I knew I had to scream. And in that moment, I knew that I had to scream like the gnarliest scream that I've never had to scream a gnarly scream. You know, I've never had anything bad happen to me before. And I just thought I'm being raped by a raper or something like that, you know, like a serial killer or something. And so the second I went to go scream, and it was instantaneous, gonna scream the scream that wakes the neighbors kind of thing, right? And the second the scream was about to go out of my throat, three sentences go directly across my mind. Like, I've heard of the expression telepathic communication, but I think that's what it was, because I mean, I've never like looked into a thing like that. I don't care. It's whatever, you know, but like, I guess that's exactly what that was, because the instant that my scream was going to come out, three sentences went directly across the middle of my brain. And it said, "Do not be afraid. This is happening. This is going to happen." It was like a concise knowledge of three sentences that was just set right into the middle of my brain that like acted like a tranquilizer, you could say, because it was not an emotional statement. It wasn't warm or cold, nice or mean. It was just three concise sentences issuing a message to me that, do not be afraid. This is happening. This is going to happen. So it like placed me directly in that center of that moment. And my heart was still beating so fast, like a bird, you know, and my eyes were wide open and I could turn my head from side to side on the pillow. But the thing was, is that when the sentences went into my brain, it turned me stupid. Like, the only thing I can compare it to is if you've ever had like a super duper high fever and you become an idiot. You know, you're like, oh, I've got a really bad fever. I mean, because I had a really bad fever once, like millions of years ago. And it was kind of like that. I was like, I'm really sick. You know, it's like your brain is boiling or something. Well, it was kind of like that, where I was like rendered dumb. And like, I felt like I had a weird smile on my face. Like, the sentences just like knocked the sense out of me and put me into a completely passive psyche, or however you want to call it. So I'm laying there and my heart is beating really fast. My eyes are wide open and I can feel like I have a stupid smile on my face. And there was like three presences, and I wasn't able to, like, at the time it was happening, I mean, I couldn't tell you what it was. It was just three energies. There was like two shorts and a tall. It was like the tall one was the in charge person, but you couldn't see anybody. You couldn't see anything. It was just in retrospect, in explaining what my experience was, that's what it was. It was two shorts and a tall, a short on either side and a tall. There was nothing to see. I couldn't look back. My eyes were open. Like I said, I could turn my head from side to side on the pillow, but they were directly on my side. And it was like energies, you know, and that's what had come in the back door, was like these energies just went like right there. And, so then what they did was, okay, so this is the really gnarly part. And, so I'm just going to tell you, I mean, this is what happened. So next thing you know, I'm laying there on my stomach, the heart is beating, I'm passive, I'm stupid. And they start to insert this, I call it the bucket. I mean, it was like the size of like, say a waste basket, maybe, but shaped like you would picture a missile head, like a, I mean, I could only picture that it was kind of round and oblong, but it was too big to fit in the human body. The only way I can describe it and the only way I could envision something like this would be a bucket that was perfectly rounded on the end. And in order to be able to insert it into anything, especially a person, it would have to have like a rim around the edges that I can picture hands would be pushing it in. And I remember thinking when they started to do that thing, I was thinking like I sounded like an idiot to myself. I was like, that's not going to fit, you know? And I know that sounds completely bizarre. Okay. But anyway, that's what the thought was in my head. I said, that's not going to fit. And I felt like a stupid idiot, you know? And they push it in. They pushed it into my body. Now, I'm a person, I've never had children before. I never did anything weird. I don't, you know, this is completely off the spectrum of my life. Okay. So I'm not making it up. And so the only thing I can imagine, it was some kind of material that, and again, it was, a comfortable temperature. I mean, it was highly lubricated. It must have, the only kind of, thing I can imagine would be like something that was like mercury, you know, how like they used to have mercury in thermometers and it was like that silver color. And if your thermometer broke, the mercury would kind of like flow all over and take different shapes and whatever. That's kind of like the only thing I can picture being that malleable, that can fit into the size of a human woman. You know what I mean? And it went all the way in and I was incredulous in my, stunned state. And then they pulled it out. They pushed it in really slow and then they pulled it out and then they pushed it in again. And when they started pulling it out, to my horror, I started feeling like I was going to have an orgasm. And that is the worst part, that in the telling, in the retelling, I'm so embarrassed, so humiliated to even have to say something that personal and intimate, like, hello, I'm not like Miss Wet Dream over here. You know what I mean? I'm not even really at that time, you know, it wasn't a normal experience to even have like with a boyfriend or something. If you catch my drift, I'm trying to say it was unavoidable and unattainable. Let's put it that way in real life. Because that thing that they inserted was so big that it touched probably every part of a woman's interior part where I guess it must have hit that G spot that they talk about and all that bullshit. Okay. I start to have an orgasm and I'm horrified. I'm embarrassed. I'm terrified. I'm humiliated. I'm freaking out because that's not even, nothing of this is supposed to happen, let alone that. And so then all of a sudden they, so just to repeat it, they pushed the thing in once, which seemed an impossible thing, pulled it out, pushed it in again. And then when they were pulling it out, I started having an orgasm. And I was so embarrassed. And the second they pulled it all the way out, and the second that it was like my body fluid, I don't know if that's what the deal was or what, but anyways, the second they pulled it out, the energies vanished, completely vanished. Now, my eyes are wide open. My heart is still beating. I'm still in a state of suspended shock and incredulity. And I'm just laying there but there's this complete sensation of emptiness in the room. Whereas before it was completely filled with energy, high, intense, gnarly, strange, three separate entity energies. Right. And I couldn't even wrap my mind around it. And I'm like laying there and I wasn't sure if I was still pinned or not, because literally I was completely pinned, like base of my spine to the base of my skull. Like you can't move. And, so I turn my head and I see my clock. It's 3:00. And so I'm thinking, I have to go to work. I don't even know if I can get up. I couldn't completely don't feel any presence of anything in my house. Like, I wasn't scared. I wasn't even tripped out yet. I was just incredulous, and I was still probably stunned under the whatever they do to make you suspend attachment, emotional attachment to what's going on. So I sat up and I saw that I could move and I had mobility. And so then I just was kind of like on automatic pilot. I thought, well, I usually have to get up at 4. It's 3. I have to go to work. I don't think I'm going to be able to sleep. And I get up. I didn't even look in the mirror. I went straight in the shower. I took a shower. Everything was like by rote, you know, the things you do to get ready for work. And it was all very kind of robotic, you could say. So anyways, I had a little distance to drive to work, and it's through the desert and everything. And I'm like, I haven't slept since the moment that I got woken up by the energies. And I haven't wrapped my mind around it at all, but I'm trying to get focused. And so I get to work, and I was like the first one in the building. I worked from 6 a.m. to 3. And I wanted to tell somebody, but you, of course, want to be careful of who you're telling. And I'm thinking ghost, right? I'm thinking, okay, it was like, I've heard of an incubus and succubus. I've heard of those things. But I mean, that was the only thing I could think of. Like, it had to been a ghost, because I mean, the idea of aliens or anything like that never entered my mind, not for a second. I just thought I was raped by a ghost or something. And but I mean, I wasn't scared. I didn't have any fear yet. I didn't have any panic yet. I just was incredulous and like going through the motions of got to go to work, got to do my job. But I do want to tell somebody. I want to ask somebody if they've ever had anything weird like this happen. So there's only one chick in my department that I thought was cool enough for me to be able to come off the wall with something like this, right? So I tell her, I was like, Kathy, can I talk to you? I got to really talk to you at break, just like privately. She's like, yeah, for sure. She's all concerned and everything. And so I start to tell her, or actually I said, have you ever been like, where you know for sure, like it happened, like a ghost maybe had sex with you at the night time? She goes, yeah. And like, she tells me something that's more reasonable, like more regular sounding, like what you would picture, you know, like, oh yeah, I think it was this guy that died. And, you know, she's just telling me, you know, her story and everything, but it wasn't like mine. And so I said, I start to tell her, and like, this is the first time I'm even saying it out loud and trying to describe it. And when I even just got to the part about the energies coming in, like I said, energies, I used that sound because it was like, and how it just snapped me down. And she got so scared. Her look on her face freaked me out so bad. Like, she was looking at me like, and I said, you know what? Never mind. I said, you know what? I know it was a dream. It was a dream. It's cool. It's cool. It's a dream. I just had to shine it on at that moment. I had to just stop the story right there, because I mean, we work for a large company. And so that was that. So now it's about 11 o'clock and 11:30 was my lunch break. So I call my best friend since junior high. This chick and I were like totally tight. She knows I'm not going to make up stories and stuff like that. So I call her up and I'm like, Cheryl, I said, something really weird happened last night. And I kind of tell her a little bit more details about, they put something in me, and I didn't, you know, get all into it because I was still in the office, you know? And so I kind of gave her the basic bones of the experience. And she says to me, aliens. And then I told her, F you, Cheryl. I said, because I thought she was like capping on me, you know, I thought she was just like, you know, putting me down, kind of like just like, oh, alien, yeah, the little green men or type of thing. Right. And so I told her, F you, you know, and I was really mad that she didn't believe me. And she's like, no, 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 I mean it. I'm telling you, really, aliens. She said, I just saw a show, and it was like one of those talk shows like Oprah, but it was whatever was back in the 80s. And she said there was 4 guests on that show, and 3 of them were women. One of them was men, and the women described very similar to what I described, but the man did not want to talk about it. The man didn't want to share his experience, and he was, you know, clearly upset. They all were. And so I was like, okay, I mean, that was the first time that even that notion that it could be something like that was suggested to me. And so, I mean, it's still the whole experience hadn't sunk in yet, because I was still kind of like, kind of just going through the motions of my day and coming out of it a little bit. Like, it's like coming out of maybe being sick and you start feeling better or something like that. And I still wasn't scared. I was just, I was going to say intrigued, but not intrigued, baffled, tripped out. You know, I wasn't fearful yet. And so now I get off work, it's 3 o'clock, and I'm driving home from work. And this is where I got scared, because now by this time I'm starting to come back to feel like myself again, you know, like my normal psyche, my everyday bebop and self, you know. And I'm driving down the highway, and I start going over everything in my mind, because now it's like I have more clarity. And when I got to the part about the orgasm, okay, I went into almost a little bit of a la-la land about it, because I don't know if, I mean, I'm sure other people can relate to this. Like, if you ever had a really good date with somebody and you guys like got it on or whatever, and you're thinking about the night before, wow, that was so great. You know, it was kind of like that. I was kind of like, wow, that was really, you know, awesome. You know? And then I said, I hope they come back. And I didn't mean to think that, right? But the second I thought that, I freaked out. Because it was kind of like a thought process. I'm thinking about, okay, you know, wow, that was weird. This happened, that happened. And then they inserted the thing and the thing, the sentences, you know, I was like going over everything in my mind while I'm driving. And then when I got to that part, I thought, that was really good. I hope they come back. That's when all of a sudden I had 100% of my senses back, and I completely freaked out, man. I was scared. I was panicking. I felt like flooring the car home. I didn't want to go home. I was scared to death, because I thought, what if they do come back? I don't want them to come back. I thought, maybe that's how, like, when you hear people disappearing and stuff like that. I mean, you hear they disappeared off the face of the earth. Like, where'd they go? Like, I thought, shit, I don't want them to come back. I don't want that. I don't like that. You know, I was like so scared to death. And I thought, I've got to tell somebody just in case I do disappear, just in case I do. Something happens to me, because it seemed completely possible that anything could happen. I mean, all of a sudden it just was terrorizing me, and I knew I had to tell my brother. And so we're like totally best friends, completely cool, no BS between us. I mean, there's no reason for him to doubt something so fantastic, you know, and unbelievable. And so I go hunting him down, and I found him, and I said, Mark, I've got to talk to you. And so he's like, what? And he's all concerned, you know, he's like, I saw nothing but concern. And I told him the whole thing. I didn't leave out any details. It was this was the absolute first complete telling of it. Because like I said, I ventured to tell it to the first chick, and then I quit. I kind of told it to my friend, and then I quit. But this time I told my brother everything, because I was freaking out and I was afraid they were going to come back. And so I tell him the whole thing. I get to the end, and he is just looking at me like terrified and concerned. I don't know what kind of look I was expecting. I mean, I wasn't expecting anything. That's the first time I ever been looked at like that by somebody that knows me and loves me. And he is so concerned and freaked out that I just told him this. And I said, you believe me, don't you? And he said, and I will never forget it, because those words he said to me just branded in my head and freaked me out and made me not talk about it for decades. He said to me, he goes, I believe that you truly believe that what you think happened really happened. And I don't think you're going crazy. He goes, but I think you're one step before losing it. And when he said he thought I was one step before losing it, I felt like I freaking lost it. It was like a kaleidoscope of, it reminds me of like on Twilight Zone or something when they show all the montage of pictures floating around in somebody's head and they're going nuts, you know, all that stuff. It's like, I felt like that. I was like all of a sudden I was like, oh yeah, you're freaking nuts, man. You are nuts. So I was terrified. I was freaked out. And so that was that.
Are you intrigued by Paranormal Talk Radio? You'll love the new Paranormal Radio app from TalkStream Live. You'll find a great selection of talk shows covering UFOs, ghosts, strange phenomena, and much more. Download the Paranormal Radio app now and start listening to the very best in paranormal talk entertainment, including the network you're listening to right now, the Paranormal Radio app, free in Google Play and the iOS App Store.
But then I became a little bit interested in just kind of finding out on my own without telling anybody. But I do have this one friend, she's a doctor, and she's totally cool, completely 100% cool. Now, this is a person that believes in weird stuff. Okay, I'm not a believe in weird stuff person. I mean, I wasn't before then. Now I'm like more open to things. But so I tell her, she's a doctor. I tell her, she's not a psychiatrist. She is a physical therapist kind of gal, just to set things, the tone straight. But so I tell her, and then she says, oh my God, I'm reading a book right now. What you are saying is completely within the realm of reality of a thing that could happen. And she was like the best person to talk to about it, because she was asking me questions that were very, very, made it very easy for me to like hone in on the entire situation. Like, she was the one that brought me in touch. She said, well, what kind of a surface did the bucket have? What kind of tone did they have? And I was able to identify it was very clinical in nature. There wasn't no nice, no mean, no nothing. It wasn't trying to, nobody was trying to be my friend or my enemy. It was just like a thing that was happening. Just like they said, do not be afraid. This is happening. This is going to happen. It happened. And that's all, that was the only communication we had. And she suggested that I should look at certain movies and read certain books. And so that was when I actually went ahead and rented a couple of different movies, just to kind of see if there was anything in there that I could kind of relate to on the subject. And there was a couple of different things. So then about a year after that, so then, you know, like, I didn't get all into it. I wasn't all, oh yeah, blah, blah, blah. Well, now from the department that I used to work in with that chick, Kathy, I get transferred to another department. It was a classified advertising. Actually, I worked for a newspaper. And, so I was, taking calls, you know, people that want to place ads. And the night prior to this call, there had been like a meteorite. I guess that's what they call like a falling star that comes really close to Earth and it's got a really long tail on it. I guess that's the meteorite. But it was huge and it was bright, and I saw it and it was like amazing, right? And people that saw it was all talking about, wow, wow, you know. Well, it just so happened that the next day we get a call from NASA, a scientist from NASA, and he's trying to triangulate. He wanted to place a classified. And remember, this is like way before like everybody has a personal computer and a cell phone. I mean, we're talking, if you want to get a lot of people involved in a something, you place a classified ad and you know, people respond to it. And so he was placing an ad, because he wanted anybody that saw the star falling or the meteorite or whatever to please contact him, because he was trying to exactly triangulate it. So that was interesting. You know, I never knew about stuff like that or whatever, but he was like very interesting and very, very scientific the way he was placing this ad. And it was like a real pleasure to talk with somebody that was really intelligent and focused, you know? And so I decided to just kind of broach a little bit. I said, do you believe in like, life in outer space or aliens or UFOs or things like that. And then he said, well, he said, I'm a scientist and I deal with facts. And unless I can prove things, you know, I maintain like a scientific skepticism. And, you know, he was explaining it all in scientist talk. I'm not talking it good, but anyways, he said, why do you ask? And so I kind of told him. And he was fascinated. He knew that I was, I wish I could remember. I'm a little nervous right now telling all this, but I wish I could remember the exact words he said, but he said it was the most cognizant telling. And, you know, it didn't sound like a bunch of malarkey to him. He was very interested, and he directed me to call a phone number on base, Edwards Air Force Base, where they had people that met and discussed things of that nature. So I thought, okay, I'll check it out, right? So I call, and then they tell me when they're meeting and where it is I have to go, and you have to go to the security gates to get on the base and all this stuff. And it's kind of like a little bit, you know, sounding kind of scary. Like, I don't want to be like locked on an Air Force base or something. Like, I didn't know what to picture, you know? And they're saying, no. And it meets this time of night and whatever on Wednesdays and 8 p.m. And it's all good. And we're interested and we want to hear what happened. And so I tell them, okay, yeah, I'll be there and everything like that. Right. So that day comes and I decide not to go because I got really scared. I thought, what am I doing? What am I going to do? What am I doing jumping into the mouth of a lion now? I'm going to be like either, you know, I don't want to deal with any skepticism. I don't want to deal with judgment. I don't want to deal with maybe they're going to lock me up. Maybe, you know, like all this, the scary thoughts that give you anxiety about something, you know, like I just thought, forget it. I just don't need to be talking about it on Edwards Air Force Base. And it even makes me scared saying it out loud right now. Like I shouldn't even said the name, but it probably doesn't mean anything anyway. So I get a phone call the next day from the group people. And they said, what happened to you last night? I said, oh, I just decided not to go, you know, and whatever. No. We really want to meet with you. They were being very anxious to meet me and very, very persuasive. And please come next Wednesday night. And we really want to see you there. Will you come? And everything like that. And I'm like, okay, because I said yes, but I meant no. And so then again, so then that day comes and this chick calls me and she's trying to talk me into it because before it was man calling. And now it's this woman and she's like, no, you know, she's trying to make it sound all good. No, then we all go out for coffee and, you know, we talk about it. And hey, it might have been as simple as a little meetup group that people talk about things. I mean, it could be that I'm just like over exaggerating who they were or what they represented, or if they're like, you know, gonna try and do tests on me to see what they did to me, or, you know, I mean, I may have embellished what their little meeting was about, but I just decided I wasn't going. I didn't want to talk about it. I didn't want to share it. I didn't want to, because it sounds too weird. So now fast forward, I'm going through a box of stuff, you know, cleaning out a box of paperwork and throwing out stuff. And I find the notebook. And so, you know how you, so I started looking through the pages to see what it was, to see if I could throw it away. And there was my account of that dream that I had. I still have that somewhere. But I don't know where it is right now. It was a pretty accurate description of what happened when I was awake. So my friend, the doctor, had said to me that, so then that's when I put the other two experiences together with this one, because I hadn't made the connection, and maybe there's not a connection, but it seems pretty, I would say that they seem like it's all part of the same deal. So she said that maybe the first time they did it in a dream state, like when I've since heard expressions like vivid dreaming or something like that, they say. So maybe the first time they did whatever they had to do to make it seem like a dream. Then the second time I was completely out. I didn't have a dream, but I had the same sensation when I woke up that something was awry, you know, wasn't the status quo for me, you know? And then the third time I wasn't going to sleep through nothing, You know what I mean? That's why I woke up immediately. And she said that that's probably why they communicated with me, was because I was cognizant. And so that's the story right there.
What memories do you actually have of the original dream?
Okay, well, the original dream, I was in a very dark place, dark like a room, like a very small quarters room where there wasn't really anything on the walls. And it was very dark and dank and gray, colorless. And I was on a table, like a cement picture, like just like a cement square rectangle that's solid. And I was laying on it and I was completely, I couldn't move. I couldn't get out of that situation. And they were like inserting things. And it was uncomfortable. It was horrible. It was scary. I didn't want to be there. And I knew that it was a dream. I knew it was a dream. And so I kept trying to reach for that lamp because I thought, okay, this is a really scary dream and I don't even want to be dreaming it. And like, believe me, I'm not a lucid dreamer. I mean, I'm not, it was out of the ordinary. And, but I mean, I didn't think it was anything other than a dream. I'm just saying that was just so intense that I didn't want to be asleep anymore, you know? And so then I was basically, to answer your question, it was just like a being in a very small enclosed space with no windows. And there were people or things or something there that was doing that to me. And it was more than one. And they didn't care about, I didn't want to be there, or there wasn't any kind of personal interaction. It was just as if I was a subject. It wasn't comfortable. There wasn't nothing good about it. It was just very uncomfortable and very scary and very frightening. And it was very claustrophobic. And it was something I didn't want to do. And I was fighting it. I was really, really fighting it. And I was fighting to get out. And the thing it reminds me of is one movie that I did see, the one part that kind of sort of made me think of when I was reaching for the light and the membrane was there. What was that movie where the guy, Travis something or other?
Travis Walton.
Was taken. Yeah, Travis Walton.
Fire in the Sky.
Yeah, Fire in the Sky. That was a great movie. To me, it was so credible. And, but the only thing that I could relate to, I mean, to me, was like when he reached his hand and he hit that gummy, weird membraney stuff, and then he ended up floating out of that thing because there was no gravity. Well, for me, it was like when I was like pressing to reach through to get to the light, it was almost like it was like a gooey, solid, rubbery membrane. And I was trying to like push through it to get to my light, to my lamp, bedside lamp. But that's all I can tell you about that dream. I mean, it was just the thing that was so intense about it was it was so freaking vivid. It was just like not being asleep, but you're asleep. You know what I mean?
Didn't in your dream, you're actually on your back on the table.
On my back on the table.
On your back. Okay. Yeah.
I feel like I was dressed. I don't feel like I was undressed. Not at any time did I feel like I was undressed. And I was not undressed when that thing happened to me.
Okay. Okay. So you're on your back. The room is dark, gray. Was there any light source at all?
Well, it seemed like almost it was a gray, but it was almost like let's say if you tried to burn cement and there was like some darker patches of like blackness or ash where it would be like a little bit darker in the gray. I mean, I totally remember that it was kind of like shades of gray, and there was a light source, but it was generally just like around me, like I would say, trying to hone in on it, was sort of, it was above me, but it wasn't bright or anything. It was like really dull and dim. When I wrote it down, I said I was in a dark, dingy, it was like a dark, dingy, enclosed space where I was on a cement table, and there wasn't no way out. There was no windows. There was nothing. I couldn't see my feet. I couldn't see forward. I was like prone on the table.
You were just looking upwards. Is that right?
I think I was, feel like that could be, but mostly what I remember is trying to reach for the light and having a really hard time moving my limbs and struggling. And it does feel like my view was, you know, from laying down, looking up. Yeah. I wasn't looking all around or anything.
Okay, so the presences that are in the room, are you seeing them in the form of shadow, or is it more of aware of...
In the dream?
In the dream, sure.
In the dream? Yeah, it was an awareness. I didn't see anything. I didn't see any forms. It was awareness that there was more than one, and they were... I couldn't see anything, but I could feel what they were doing, and they were doing it a whole bunch, and they were doing it with all kinds of different weird tools, and it was completely invasive. I was scared, but I mean, even when I woke up, I never thought it was alien or outer space stuff or anything like that. I just thought it was just terrible. I didn't see any humans or anything. I didn't see anything. It was just a sense of being experimented on.
It felt clinical.
Well, the first time it wasn't. The third time it was very clinical because there was no attachment to the situation because they completely like removed my senses, I guess. I had nothing but a dumb smile. But in the dream, there wasn't no pleasant stupidness going on. It was a complete panic and terror and stop it and what the hell's going on, quit it and I want out of here type of thing, you know, help, wake up, you know, that was how it was.
And the membrane, did it feel like it was all around you, or was it only when you turned to your side? Which side was it, was your lamp on, do you recall?
It was my left arm, and it was on my left bedstand table, and it was a little, you know, night lamp. And when I tried to, it was first of all really, really even hard to get my arm to move. And I knew it was a dream, and I knew the way you wake up is you force yourself to wake up and just turn on that dang light. And I was trying to reach for the light, but it was as if my arm wouldn't go through a thing, like it wouldn't, like through the dream membrane or something, you know, like I couldn't break out of the dream. It wasn't letting me get to that lamp. And I mean, it was a panic thing. Have you ever had, I don't know if you've ever had those dreams where it feels like you just got dropped on the bed and you kind of almost bounce a little bit?
I sure have.
Yeah. Well, kind of like that. When I finally was able to jerk my hand through it, I turned on that lamp. And I mean, it was immediate, and it was a complete knowledge of, oh my God, that was the gnarliest, most realistic, scary dream I have ever had in my entire life. And I had to write it down because that was nuts. You know, it wasn't no tiptoe through the tulips. It was nuts. I mean, I've never even would imagine something like that. That's weird.
Dreams can usually fade very quickly. Usually as soon as you're up out of bed and walk out of the room, your dream has started to fade already. With vivid dreams, yeah, they're very clear. Is it still very clear in your mind now?
Oh, yeah. I mean, I can picture it perfectly. And you know, it's always the same, exact same picture. I mean, I could draw it. I could probably really draw it. The only thing is where the things were that were like doing the stuff, I would have to, like, if I was drawing that room and I was using charcoals, I would, you know, make a rectangular slab, like solid block looking thing. And I would just put, you know, three solid walls because I couldn't see the fourth wall. I just saw the walls that were behind me and on either side of me. And it was like dingy in there, like not dirty, but just like the color of things like was like a sort of a, it was like a gray, like a primer gray, I guess, or cement gray looking. And then it had like patches that look like, you know, I would draw, like I would color it in sort of black in certain areas, you know, like shadowish color on the walls, but it was part of the wall and some white areas. And then wherever the beings were or whoever was doing that to me, it would be shaded out. Like I would take an eraser and I would shade out the charcoal in those spots so that it was like almost like the invisible thing right there. Cause you couldn't see anybody.
What about your other senses? Do you remember any smells?
No smells.
No smells. Okay. Mm-mm. What about when you're led down, did the table feel warm?
The only sensations that I remember is that I'm being violently violated and it's with objects that are not, like, you could almost say dental tools or like just weird. It would be like a going to a Frankenstein type of situation where they have all these weird items that they're putting in you.
Sure. And yeah. Okay.
I mean, I was just, I didn't want that to be happening. And so I just kept trying to wake up and get out of it.
Yeah. It's not something you'd want to happen. Okay. You mentioned at the very beginning when you were a child and you saw a saucer.
Yeah. That's sometimes I wonder if that has any connection to it because, okay. So I was 4 years old, it's 1959. And, my brother was five and my mother was driving the car and I was sitting in the back seat. My brother was in the front with my mom. And she goes, kids, do you see that? And we were going up over a railroad track. And there was this bright light in the sky right above the car. And I thought she was talking about the things coming out of the light. I didn't know she was talking about the light because when you're 4 years old, everything's sort of new. You know what I mean? You're seeing new things every day, every second. And just becoming aware of your surroundings, you know, more than like when you were three. So I thought what she was pointing to, because mom was tripping out. She's like, can you see that? Do you see that? And I said, yes, but I was like gleeful because I thought she was talking about these bubble things that were coming through the windshield. Now this is going to again sound completely bizarre, but at this point, I don't care what it sounds like. But there was these little discs coming through the glass, the windshield of the car. I call them the bubbles because they were like bubbled colors. Like it would look exactly like when you blow a bubble and you see all those beautiful rainbowies in the bubble that you blew. Well, it was like little plastic discs. The only thing I can compare it to is like, do you remember like when you had notebook paper and you had those little, like if you would tear your notebook paper, had those three holes in it mm-hmm. and they sold those little round circle things that you could put on the edge of your notebook paper so it wouldn't rip notebook.
Yeah.
Those things. Well, they were like that, but they were like see-through. Like if I was trying to recreate it for somebody, I would take little clear plastic discs with little holes right in the middle of them but make them be bubble colored. And there would be like a whole bunch of them, like 25, 30, 45 of them. And they would all be coming in. My mom was pointing to the light. And the light was in the sky above the car and the bubbles came in, like picture where the rear view mirror is in the middle of the windshield. They came right through the glass above that and maybe even below it. And they came right over into the back seat, right into my head. Like they disappeared. I mean, I couldn't see them once they reached me. They all just disappeared because I wanted to play with them. I wanted to touch them. They were delightful. And pretty and cute and neat, you know, and I always thought that that's what my mom was pointing to. And it wasn't until years later that she had brought it up. She was talking to somebody else about it. And I said, the only thing I remember about that is I remember the little bubbles that came in through the windshield. And of course she's like, yeah, right. Whatever, dude. You know, it's like, you just imagine that, you know, like, oh, the child's imagination, you know, but like, no, I saw that. I'm a real down to earth person. And I was a little kid and I saw that those bubbles came in. I call them the bubbles, but they were like little crystal discs or something that disappeared, like a bubble would disappear, but they went straight into my like forehead. They didn't go in my forehead. They just disappeared from sight when I didn't see them anymore.
And they were only coming to you.
Yeah. They came directly in. So then that same friend of mine that's really into this kind of stuff, she suggested that maybe it was some kind of tracking. You know, she suggested that maybe they were something to keep like track of where I've been, like so that they could catch up with me when I was at childbearing age or something. But I mean, shoot, these are just all suppositions, you know, they're theories.
Speculation.
Think about, yeah, speculation.
That's an interesting one, that.
I'd love to take a lie detector test. I'd love to be like hypnotized or, I mean, if anybody ever like doubted me, I would just love to be able to say, look, here's the proof. I mean, if you have to have something to prove, but I also would like to just know for myself. And I did ask somebody, I did go to a hypnotherapist and I asked her if she would put me under, and I kind of told her why. And she said she would have to talk with somebody else about that. And then when she did, when she had told me that she didn't want to open that can of worms, was her way of putting it.
Yeah, sure. Yeah.
I wouldn't mind opening that can of worms. I mean, I'm kind of curious a little bit. I don't want them to come back, though.
No, of course you don't. But yeah, I mean, obviously at the minute it's very difficult with the whole situation in the world. It might be a venture to go down. You know, you may not always get the right answers, and you may hit a couple of brick walls. You know, it's a very difficult thing. Sometimes your mind will happily venture into these territories. Other times there's walls there.
You know, I come to think about it, like at this time, I mean, I don't really care. I just take it as a grain of salt. It's just like one more. It's just like a thing that happened that's like totally bizarre. And I don't mind sharing it with people that are interested. I don't mind sharing it with you or your program or whatever. It's the first time I got, there was only one other time I ever saw what I perceive was a UFO, but I didn't connect it to any of these other things. Like the main weird thing is what I told you. But one time when I was 15, I was with three other people and we lived in the valley, and it was a beautiful, beautiful night. It had rained all day and then it cleared up and the sky was beautiful. You could see every star in the sky. And we drove up in a VW up to the top of this mountain, and just to look at the stars and smoke pot. So that's why what happened seemed like, oh yeah, well, you guys were getting stoned. So, you know, but like as teenagers, it was the 70s and everybody will smoke a little, you know, and stuff. And so we had went up this top, this mountain, and we're all just looking at the stars and just smoking. And I see this airplane go across the sky. And then I see this other thing like trailing it, seeming like it's off from a distance from it, but it's like flying near it. And so I'm just like watching it, like not thinking anything really, just going, wow, that's weird that they're both like going the same direction. But the one that was like following it was like this really, really, really bright light. And it was really, it was so bright. And in that brightness of it was like billions of different colors, like rainbowy, but it was almost like you couldn't like really hone in on just one color of it. It was like that kind of crystal bubbly color scheme, I guess. I don't know. It was like a light that you can see other colors reflected in it. So it's like kind of following alongside this plane, and then it goes like ahead of it, on the side of it, ahead of it. And now it's like sitting like practically parked in front of it, and this plane is still going. And I said, is anybody else seeing this? And everybody's like, yeah. And so we're like all tripping out, right? Because I thought maybe I was just looking at it. But we were all watching it. And then it let the plane go by. And then it like flew back over to the direction from which it had come. And then it just sat there. And then it started going wild. And it started like spinning all around, like going crazy. Like just if you had a sparkler or something. And you know, if you have like a sparkler and you're spinning it all around and you see like little trails of it and stuff. It was doing that. And then it was like, what the hell? And we were so freaked out. And then it stopped. And we're just watching it. And we are panicking, right? Because we don't know what it is. And all of a sudden, it starts coming in our direction. And the dude that was driving, man, he floored it. And he nailed it in reverse. And here we are on these muddy mountain roads, right? I mean, we could have flew off it. We could have got killed. He just floors it in reverse. And we just got the hell out of there. Went down that mountain, never talked about it, never talked about it. And like this, we're all 15. This is about like what, 1971. And we were just all so scared. We just all went home, went our own way. And I'm still friends with one of the chicks that I was with. It was her and her sister and her sister's boyfriend. And she's never talked about it with her sister, but I've talked about it with her and we've compared notes. But like that's the only other weird thing I've ever seen. That's all I have to tell you. That's pretty gnarly right there, I know.
Yeah. The interesting thing is the Edwards Air Force Base. I've never heard them doing something like that, or even on a base to my knowledge. And did you live local to the base?
Yeah. I lived in the Antelope Valley. And the Antelope Valley, California, if you look it up, it was a very huge aerospace valley. And like Chuck Yeager, he's a very famous test pilot. And they had a huge aerospace industry in there. And Edwards Air Force Base is like, I guess, sort of like near the Mojave Desert, if not in the Mojave Desert. And I didn't know what to picture when they were telling me that these meetings were on base. Like I was picturing something you'd see in the Jetsons or something with all kinds of weird big buildings and spaceship things and stuff like that. You know, I didn't know what to picture it. One time when I did go to Edwards Air Force Base, just for something different, to go visit somebody that lived on base, it turns out that what it is it's a houses that were built, housing tracts that were like built, I guess, in the 40s and 50s for people that to live on base while their spouses were in the Air Force, I guess. And it was all these, it looked kind of really old back. It was real mid-century, you know, houses on these blocks, you know, in the middle of the desert, but like they all have grass and trees and stuff like that. And then they have like a little town on base, and it's like, you know, they have like all the regular stuff of restaurants and stuff, but it's like very small scale. And the meetings were, so this scientist said that he believed that I could connect with these people that had these meetings on these Wednesdays, and they just get together and they talk about extraterrestrials. That's the word I was looking for. That's the word I had asked him. I said, do you believe in extraterrestrials? I couldn't remember that word before. And that's when I shared my story with him. And then that's when he said, I think you might want to go to these meetings. So then he gave me a phone number and I called, and they just sounded like regular people, but they met on the base. So, I mean, I don't know if they were meeting in a meeting room. I don't know. Like I was picturing it being, when they say Edwards Air Force Base, I was picturing it being like weird scientific office type looking stuff. You know, I didn't know what to picture.
And did they introduce themselves? Did they tell you their names? Were they military?
No, they were. Well, my understanding was it was a civilian, like a guy named John, you know, and he, oh yeah, and just real friendly, really welcoming. I didn't get any vibes, like, you know, no kind of weird vibes or anything at all. It just seemed like I'm friendly and yes, we'd love to hear it and stuff like that. But then I just like chickened out. And then when he called me back, he was like really urging me to come. It's no big deal. We really want to hear your story. We're a bunch of real nice people. And then I said I would go. But then that chick called me earlier in the day on the Wednesday that I said I would go. And then she really tried to get me to come by making it sound really fun. And I mean, it might have turned out to be something really casual, like five or six people that sit around somebody's house and have coffee and then go out to eat afterwards or something. It could have been as simple as that. She tried to make it sound like that. But like it's, my experience was so bizarre. I didn't feel casual about it. And I didn't know if they were casual about it.
So you kind of had a gut feeling that, you know, probably not a good idea. Go. Yeah, it wasn't for you.
I was scared because back then, I mean, like they didn't talk about, I mean, you'd hear about that kind of stuff, but it was pretty either corny or ridiculous or unbelievable. Seems like now everybody talks about everything. You know, you have the internet now and all that stuff. But back then it was pretty much you were limited to the channels you were watching on TV and newspapers and every now and then a weird magazine or a weird program on TV. I never heard of anybody having something like that happen. You know, the thing that I think besides the weird physical aspect that I had to endure is the sentences, the way they went in my head. I've never experienced anything like that in my life. Like that made it easy for me to understand when you hear people talk about telepathic communication.
Yeah.
That's exactly what it was. Exactly what it was. I mean, it completely freed my mind of any other thought, of any fear, of anything. And I mean, how could anything be more concise than do not be afraid? This is happening. This is going to happen. Like they just like put you directly in your place. And, you know, I have actually used that terminology since that happened, like on myself because one time I was in a car that was going up a freeway on ramp too fast and it was wet out and the car started to spin out and we started going over the side of the overpass. You know, we were going to go down a hill and probably get killed, you know, because the seatbelts didn't even work in the car. And when I saw that we were going to go over the side, those sentences flashed in my head. Do not be afraid. this is happening. This is going to happen. Like, it put me right in the now, you know, like, okay, this is happening. This is going to happen. So you're going down. And fortunately, the car slammed against a post and did not go over. But I remember thinking, wow, that was pretty gnarly that I was able to use those three senses since I ever heard them, you know.
Suggestive, isn't it?
Yeah.
It's suggestive is what it is.
It was suggestive, yeah.
People talk about this form of communication, and it seems to just help people. It helped you to relax. It helped you to accept what was happening.
Mm-hmm. It did. I mean, it didn't even make me do that. It just like acted as an anesthetic.
Yeah.
I didn't reason about it. Like I didn't go, oh, okay, it's going to happen. It's happening. It's going to happen. There wasn't any like acknowledgement or acceptance or anything. It was just kind of like, it was like a knowledge that was implanted in my brain that just made me still and passive so that they could do that thing. And the weird feature was this, how it made you feel completely stupid, like an idiot, just like you were dumbstruck.
Powerful.
Have you heard that before? Has anybody ever, where they're rendered unable to respond to it and they just become passive and suppliant?
Yeah. Yeah. I've heard it many times. Quite a lot of stuff you said, I've heard many times.
Oh, wow. Okay. So you've never heard anything similar about those little bubbly things that came through the windshield?
No, it's an interesting point. And it's again, like I said, it's subjective. So what you are seeing when you were four is how you mm-hmm. relate to that when you were four. It doesn't necessarily mean you can hear it from someone else and they'd be different maybe. But that's mm-hmm. that's kind of what I'm looking for. I'm looking for these little bits of the puzzle. But all this stuff is important. And that's why it's important to come on. You know, and now someone else will hear this and someone else will relate to your experiences. I guarantee it. So every time I produce an episode, I then get more people contact me.
That's so cool.
Mm.
I mean, now I'm a little bit more excited than I was. I was so nervous. But like the fact that like the bubble thing, like I never, like to me, that is like the most significant thing that I remember as from being a kid was that, you know, out of everything, right? That's like the most unique thing because I never saw it before or since. And it was real. I mean, it really happened. They really came out. And I was like really delighted to see them. Like they were beautiful. It was neat. And how are you going to make up something like that? Like when you're four, you know what I mean? I saw what I saw.
Exactly.
And they came to me. They were warm, you know, they were cool. They were neat little groovy little entities. And they liked me. They came right to me directly. They went right over the seat, right to my forehead and disappeared. And I remember it was kind of a bummer when I didn't see them after that. I mean, for that, in that moment, I was like, oh, I wanted to play with them. You know, there were so many of them and they were so tiny and flat.
It is unique. Okay, Barbara, I really appreciate you coming on today and sharing all that for our listeners today.
Thank you for allowing me to.
It's been our pleasure. Okay, you take care of yourself. I'll talk to you soon.
Thank you. Okay, bye-bye.
That is all for this episode. Keep updated and connected with the show on Twitter, Facebook, and Instagram. And if you have an encounter you would like to share on the podcast, you can email me at ufochronicles@gmail.com or reach out to me via the contact page on my website at ufochroniclespodcast.com. A special thanks to Barbara for sharing tonight, and thank you for listening. I will be back next time. Till then, stay safe and keep watching the skies. Goodbye.